Hello and welcome to our Essential Oils for Sleep presentation. We're just going to take a look at some of the essential oils that are used in sleep formulas and used as individuals. They're usually things that are calming and sedative and soothing. So before we go ahead and get started, I want to make sure that you are aware that we are presenting information that's educational in nature. And when you're working with people with sleep issues, especially those who come in and they're on Ambien and other kind of medications for sleep, that you are really clear with them that what you're doing is not medical advice, that if they need any adjustments in their medication, they need to go see their medical doctor. But what you're going to do is try to get to the heart of it, to really understand what the underlying factors are, and there may be a number of them that are interfering. And it's from research and education and clinical experience, but it's definitely not medical advice. We're not diagnosing and we're not treating. So let's take a look at essential oils for sleep. Here I have a list, and there's a lot of places where you can get a lot more information on this. I could do, probably a 3 or 4 hour presentation if we went into each and every one of these in the kind of detail that's available. So what I did was I put down two references at the bottom of this. This is from the Prairie Homestead, and there's Essential Oils for Sleep page, and then EssentialOilBenefits.com, and then there's a list of ones for sleep. So the ones that we tend to see most often used for helping people with sleep are lavender, vetiver, Roman chamomile, frankincense, lang lang, clary sage, valerian, bergamot, sandalwood, marjoram, cedarwood, and orange. Okay, and remember with essential oils, we're just using small amounts, either aromatized into the room, put on someone's pillow, put into a bath where they do that before bed, sometimes put into a beverage where they would sip, but we're talking single to double drop doses. We're not talking huge amounts. We are not talking 30 to 60 to 100 drops like you would for a tincture. They're very concentrated and very potent. And some of them are not good to take internally. So it's really important that you pay attention to that and don't prescribe something unless you know for sure it's internal use is okay, but also that it's from a reputable company that's not extracting their essential oils using petrochemicals. So reusing essential oils for sleep, how do we do this? Okay, well, there's a bunch of different combos that you can get from various companies, and I just thought I would put them up. There's one called Sleep Essence from Young Living. There's a Stress Away from Young Living and a Peace and Calming from Young Living. And I've used these with my son, was having difficult, when he was in school, he just was really stressed out about school and just didn't sleep at night. He was worried about this and worried about that. So we put a diffuser in his room and I played around with some of these. I think the one I liked the best was Stress Away. And Serenity is that's the one for doTERRA. So I've used that one with him. I put that in the thing. And he actually went through a whole bottle of it in 2 weeks because he would just turn that thing on in full blast and it helped him to sleep because he was diffusing it into the air. It helped him to calm himself down. So you can make your own. And this is a blend that I've heard about, I've seen it researched. You basically can just make your own blend and then use it however you want to use it. 12 drops of orange, 8 drops of lavender, 4 drops of cedarwood, 3 drops of valerian, and 2 drops of Roman chamomile. Oh, and this was from the Young Living site. How do you use? Well, topically, you use it on feet, head, or neck. You put it a few drops or a drop or two on the feet. You could put a carrier oil whenever you're putting essential oils on the body. You may want to put a carrier oil, meaning like usually coconut is what's used, just to dilute it so that it doesn't burn or sting. Some of the oils are much more gentle on the skin, and some of them are really, really, you know, kind of potent, like oregano, for example, would burn. You can use a diffuser and you can put it on the pillow. For some people, having like a handkerchief near the bed too is a good thing, and they can just put a few drops on it and then just pick it up and breathe into it. They wake up again, breathe into it. Some people don't like to put it on their pillowcase for whatever reason. Don't want to stain their pillowcase, so you can have a tissue or something like that. So Another topic we're going to talk about here is adaptogens for improving sleep. So some of the adaptogens that I like for sleep are ashwagandha, schizandra, eleuthero, ginseng, either Korean or American, holy basil, also known as tulsi or rhodiola. Now, I'm not going to go into all the details about these guys now because we go through that in our adrenal stress module of the program, and we also have that in our program that we have for the consumers called CAFE, Correcting Adrenal Fatigue and Exhaustion. And we have pages and pages that describe these in detail and when they're useful. But the way that they work in general, the overall arching way they work, is to just soothe and balance the system, the adrenal system, the stress system. So it helps to calm people down, but they can also help to bring people up. And it's a matter of finding when and where to use them. I find that ashwagandha and schizandra work really, really well at bedtime. You can have someone take them earlier on if you want to as well, but ashwagandha and schizandra at bedtime can have a really nice soothing and calming effect. Whereas eleuthero and the Korean and American ginseng, I find those more effective to work with them during the day to get their energy pathways going, to get them in balance so that by the time they reach the night, everything's back going down so they can fall asleep. Holy basil, I've used that both times. I've used it during the day for people. I've also used it at night right before bed. I like to get the holy basil loose and I just pack it in. And there's all kinds of flavors of it you can get. You can get, you know, cinnamon and you can get licorice, although I wouldn't recommend a licorice one at bedtime. I'd recommend it during the day more. So that's tulsi and rhodiola. Rhodiola, again, you got to be really careful with dosing rhodiola, because if you want somebody to calm down and fall asleep, you have to give it at bedtime, but you give a higher dose than you would first thing in the morning. And I know that seems counterintuitive, but if you use a low dose of rhodiola in the morning, it's going to help with energy production. If you use a high dose of rhodiola in the evening, then you're going to help with calming people down. But if you get it wrong for that person, you're going to have them be drowsy during the day and they're wide awake at night. So it may take a little bit of doing. So let's take a look now at the amino acids that enhance sleep. Amino acids are super important for the production of the various neurotransmitters. And that's how most of them that enhance sleep are effective. The ones that we're going to look at are serine, theanine, tryptophan, 5-HTP, GABA, glycine, glutamine, and taurine. So we're going to look at each one of these in turn and help you to see how you can use these various amino acids when they're indicated, when they're contraindicated for people with sleep issues. We'll start with serine. Serine, you may have heard of as phosphatidylserine, which is a phosphorylated form. Off to the right, you'll see a picture of the serine molecule, very small and easy to see. And then you also see a picture of the phosphatidylserine, that's the middle one, and phosphoserine. Okay, so the phosphatidylserine actually has some extra molecular structure to it. It's not just the one phosphate group, whereas the O-phosphoserine is just one phosphate group added onto the serine. So adrenaline and cortisol increase alertness. We know that, right? If the adrenals are active right before bed, we're going to have a really hard time falling to sleep. So when people have had emotional upheaval during the night, maybe it was a sexual abuse by a parent or a father late at night. Maybe it was a break-in from, you know, there was a robbery in their house. Maybe it was that dad came home drunk at night and started screaming at yelling at 2 in the morning and then started, you know, yelling at mom or hitting mom. Whatever the situation is, people who have had that kind of adverse childhood experience, even if it's an adult experience, but mostly it affects the child, then they get a sense of hypervigilance. So it's super important for you to get a good history with people when they're having trouble sleeping. When did this first begin? What was it like in your household? What kind of things happened during the night when you were a kid, a teenager, a young adult? Sometimes the high levels of or hypervigilant state has nothing to do with that early abuse. It has to do with a mom, right? Has a baby, then has another baby, and the babies are up all night and you're laying awake. Okay, baby fell asleep. Are they going to wake up? Do they need me? Did they roll over? You know, there's all kinds of things that happen with babies, and it makes for difficulty for the mom to actually fall asleep, even though she's exhausted. And even after the baby starts to sleep through the night, oftentimes it's months before that rhythm can be put back in place. So when you're looking at people who have sleep issues, it's super important to ask the right questions, to really go deep with them, because hypervigilance does not induce good sleep. So we look at the amino acid serine in the phosphatidyl form, the phosphorylated form, to lower cortisol levels, to enhance brain function and memory. And this is really cool. It's been shown to actually help repair the hippocampus, which helps to restore memory. It helps to decrease anxiety and depression, improve mood, enhance metabolism, and acts as an antioxidant. It's a pretty cool supplement. And in those whose sleep issues are related to the cortisol levels and all, the phosphatidylserine can be amazing. I've had people say within days, oh my God, my memory is back and I'm finally starting to sleep. It could take a couple of weeks before it fully engages. But if after a month of taking it, you're not really seeing any significant change in their ability to fall asleep, then you want to be looking elsewhere. What kind of dosing? Well, the dosing varies a lot. You can take oral capsules, 100 milligrams at bedtime is the typical dose. And then 100 milligrams again every time the person wakes up. What I'll do is if that doesn't work within a week, then I'll increase it. I'll have them take 200 milligrams at bedtime, see if that works. I'll have them take 200 milligrams every time they wake up. So we're trying to find the optimal dose for the individual. But there have been studies that showed that the optimal dose is 800 milligrams every 24 hours. Okay. When you look at an expensive supplement like phosphatidylserine, we're looking at like $30 for a month's supply of one per day. So a bottle of 30 for $30, you might get it down a little bit below that if you buy bigger bottles. But we're looking at upwards of or close to a dollar per capsule. So if someone has to take 8 capsules a day in order to have results, that's a pretty pricey supplement, right? $8 a day times 30, that's over $200 for a month. Now, it may be worth it for someone if they finally can sleep, but you really, they're not going to sustain that for very long. And hopefully, while you've got them on this phosphatidylserine for their sleep, you're working on the underlying issues. You're helping them to work with the hypervigilant state and calm their adrenals and have those kind of stress reduction pieces. And you're also working to support the adrenals to produce less of the cortisol the way it's doing. So you eventually can get them down, hopefully. But it 8 capsules a day, that's pretty expensive. So the way that I've found to be more cost effective is to find a powdered form. And there are a couple of bulk suppliers that you can find over the internet. Just be careful and check them out. You can use the powdered form. I love the powdered form because then you're gently titrating. And topicals another way. Apex Energetics has a cream that has not just phosphatidylserine, even though that's the main ingredient, but it also has some, you know, lavender and some of these other sedative herbs in it, and it's topical, so you don't need quite as much. That's still kind of pricey because it's expensive to buy that. I bought some of the powder just to see, and I was going to try it on some people, and I had a friend over, and we were chatting, and he revealed to me that he had so much trouble sleeping, and it was ridiculous how much trouble sleeping he had. We were just playing around. He's a naturopath, and we were playing around with herbs and trying different things, and I said, well, I just got this phosphatidylserine in powder. You could be my guinea pig. Let's just try it out, and he just took a little bit before he left, and I said, well, just take more. And I put some in a bag for him and take it. And he had the best sleep ever when he started taking this phosphatidylserine. I love it when it works that quickly. But the thing is, it doesn't always. And you know that when you're working with patients that they want quick fixes because that's what they've been grown accustomed to. So it's very important that you're explaining to them, hey, I'm working on understanding why you're not sleeping. We're going to look at all these factors. I'm going to try a variety of different herbs and essential oils and amino acids to try to help you to sleep better. Some of them will work. Some of them won't. Some of them are going to take some time. It's not necessarily that we're going to find a magic bullet all in one site. So you really have to educate them to know that this is a process, and you're going to try to find that solution, that formulation that goes together. That includes not just the herbs and the supplements, but the lifestyle and all those things we talked about at the beginning and we'll review at the end of the presentation. So let's look at another amino acid called theanine. Theanine is found in green and black tea, and it's very rare. Most of the amino acids don't easily cross the blood-brain barrier, so they don't get into the brain as easily. So when you take supplements of them, you get a small percentage. But this one is different. 5-HTP is another one like that. It actually crosses the blood-brain barrier easily and can influence the neurotransmitters. The thing with theanine, it doesn't really promote sedation or drowsiness like some of them. It's just more relaxation. You know, let it go, let the mind relax, but doesn't like, oh, I'm drowsy, you got to go to sleep. And it's definitely considered very safe and effective. So you can try it. I'm not a big fan of just like experimenting with a lot of single amino acids. But what you've got to be explaining to folks who are having trouble with sleeping is that you're going to be getting to the root cause, but you're going to be experimenting with things, and we want to try some things. And when you've tried a lot of the other stuff, the herbs and all that, and it's not really working, or you haven't found the combination, you just keep trying, and then you find what works for that person. Because if they don't get a good night's sleep, they can't get their adrenals healed, their blood sugar healed, their thyroid healed, their digestion healed, or anything else. So let's talk about tryptophan. Tryptophan is one of the essential amino acids. Body can't make it. It gets converted to another form of tryptophan called 5-hydroxytryptophan. And that's converted to serotonin, which then converts to melatonin. But tryptophan is the only amino acid that can convert to serotonin and ultimately increase melatonin. There are no others. You can't form tryptophan from anywhere else. So it's super important that people get enough tryptophan. There was a time back in, I think it was the 1990s, when people had discovered that tryptophan was actually a really good sleep aid for a lot of folks and antidepressant for a lot of folks because of its effect on serotonin. Well, there got to be a contaminated batch of tryptophan. Some claim foul play by the drug companies who didn't want there to be a non-pharmaceutical wonder supplement. However, whatever it was, a lot of people got seriously sick and a lot of people died from an eosinophilia myalgia syndrome. And it turned out that they linked it to tryptophan, but it turned out it was linked to a specific batch of tryptophan that came out from a specific lab. But for a while, tryptophan was off the market. Nobody could get tryptophan and people were devastated because it had worked so well. Well, then they figured out how to create or where to get 5-hydroxytryptophan, which is actually from a plant called Griffonia seeds, which we don't get here in the U.S., but I think they're from South America. But that then, once they started using the 5-HTP instead of the tryptophan, found that for a lot of people, it was actually better because 5-HTP is closer to serotonin than is tryptophan. There's a couple of steps in between. So it's super important, though, when you're having people take amino acids, that you also recommend B vitamins with them, because a lot of the B vitamins are the synergists, the cofactors that help to move them along. So for example, with tryptophan to serotonin to melatonin, you need B6, vitamin B6, and you need fair amounts of it. I generally supplement B6 in the form of P5P for pyridoxal 5-phosphate. We go into more details about the different forms in the micronutrients module. Carbs, tryptophan, and sleep. So a lot of people will say, oh, you got to eat right before bed and it's going to help people sleep better. And that may be true if you take tryptophan and carbs right before bed, that it will help you sleep better. But there's a lot of downsides to eating right before bed. In particular, one of them happens to be related to the fact that you raise the insulin levels, lower the growth hormone, and so you don't get the nice spike, which is really healing at the beginning of the night. So there's a number of reasons. But the theory is that because tryptophan crosses the blood-brain barrier, if you eat it with carbohydrates, if you take it with carbohydrates versus other amino acids, it's going to make it through without the competition for the receptor. And the theory here too is that when you get insulin release, so the response to the carbs directs the other amino acids to muscle, mainly the branched chains, but leaving tryptophan a clearer passage into CSF. So it's all theory, but we find that tryptophan at bedtime can definitely be helpful. So some food sources of tryptophan. Pumpkin seeds are by far the highest source of all the seeds, and in fact of most of the other things listed here. And then, close in combination would be chia, sesame, sunflower, and flax. Nuts like pistachios, cashews, almonds, and hazelnuts, and that's in descending order of tryptophan content. Legumes, and again, descending order, soy, lentils, and white beans. Not a big fan of unfermented soy, but tempeh or miso are good forms of soy if you're looking to get tryptophan. Tart cherries and their juice contain lots of tryptophan. Tart cherries, a lot of people are pushing to have tart cherry juice right before bed. Again, I'm a little concerned about the tart cherry juice right before bed just because it's got some sugar in it. It's going to raise up the levels of insulin in the system. So I think you have to experiment, and if that's the only thing that gets somebody to sleep, well, by all means, do it, right? We gotta get them sleeping. Bananas actually have a little bit of tryptophan, and then poultry, meat, and dairy products have a fair amount of tryptophan as well. I'm not a fan of dairy products, just go for the record. I don't think most people do well with them. I've seen too many downsides, but they do have tryptophan, and that's one of the reasons that people say take some warm milk before going to bed. So 5-HTP is a natural flow from tryptophan. It's from the Griffonia simplifolia seeds, which we don't get here, but that's where they're extracted from. I'd love to see some Griffonia seeds. I should look it up and see if any of the rare seed companies would get me them. If you'd like to see that. It's a precursor to serotonin. It's easy to absorb and highly bioavailable, which is why it's so good. It's really easy to get in, really easy to get across the blood-brain barrier. It doesn't compete like the tryptophan itself does. That 5-HT helps it very much make it easier to cross the blood-brain barrier. But you have to make sure that you give them vitamin B6 because that's a cofactor. There was a study of 12 healthy volunteers. 5-HTP appeared to increase the duration of REM sleep by up to 47%. That's pretty significant. Increasing the duration of REM sleep is going to have people be much more rested when they get up. Let's talk about GABA, good old GABA, gamma-aminobutyric acid. It's a calming neurotransmitter, and it has effects that are similar to Valium. Valium is one of the really potent, relaxing, and sleep agents that are prescribed for lots of people. I, in fact, was prescribed Valium back when I was in college because I was having really bad headaches, and they thought I was stressed out, and that would help. I didn't take it for more than a few weeks because I didn't like the drug-like effect that it had. I mean, it is a drug, but that drugged-out feeling that I had when I woke up in the morning. GABA can reduce the activity of nerve cells in the brain, so it kind of turns things down, says, "Okay, calm down, everything's good." As such, it becomes really great for working with people with attention deficit disorder, and that's kids or adults. There are a lot of adults with ADD, epilepsy, and Parkinson's. So it helps to calm everything down. GABA is often deficient in folks that when they can't fall asleep and they also have a lot of anxiety during the day and they just seem right on edge. One of the best ways to determine the neurotransmitters and which ones tend to be out of balance for people is to learn how these things work. And one of my favorite books on that is The Edge Effect by Eric Braverman. There's a whole section to determine, are you a GABA type? Are you a serotonin type? Which is your type? We'll go through a lot more of that in our neurotransmitter section. There's also the genetic SNP, I thought I should mention, related to GABA. It's called GAD. And when the GAD is not working properly, so the GAD is underactive, it's basically glutamic acid decarboxylase. So it doesn't convert glutamic acid to GABA. Now here's the irony of that. Glutamic acid is a stimulating neurotransmitter. GABA is a calming neurotransmitter. So if you've got somebody who has just very revved up and hyped up, and you can fix and increase that GAD enzyme activity, then they're going to make more GABA and calm down, right? So it's really ironic that they sit right next to each other in this one enzyme that converts them, glutamic acid decarboxylase. But if you're looking at people's genetics, you can look for the GADs and then you know, okay, this person, we're going to have to work hard with this. And it's a GABA-related thing and maybe some of the things to help increase GABA. Now, GABA, here's the thing. GABA does not cross the blood-brain barrier very well as GABA. So when it's complex to other things, like there's a complex of it with nicotinic acid, that tends to cross the blood-brain barrier. So you want to look for either liposomal GABA or GABA that's been kind of compounded with, say, nicotinic acid. And that there's something called, I'm drawing a blank on the name of it, but it starts with a P, Anyway, it's a P. Go look it up. It's a nicotinic acid complex. So that's it with GABA. Glycine. Glycine is another one of our inhibitory neurotransmitters. So the trend is that the inhibitory neurotransmitters, when they're deficient or when they're kind of overpowered by the more excitatories, you get into trouble. So we need to be able to do things to increase the levels. Glycine also reduces core body temperature, so that's really what we need at night. It helps to relax the blood vessels at night. So this is going to help prepare for a good night's sleep. So there's a study that showed that of people with sleep issues. These people already knew they had sleep issues. They gave them 3 grams of glycine or a placebo before bed. The glycine group had significant improvements in fatigue, liveliness, peppiness, as they said in the study, and mental clarity. Pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And that was just 3 grams of glycine. They also took, that was people with sleep problems. They took people without sleep problems. I thought this was really telling. Their normal average sleep was determined to be 7.3 hours. They were given 3 grams of glycine at bedtime. And what basically, they deliberately reduced their time in bed to 5.5 hours. For 3 consecutive nights. So that's almost 2 hours less, and at 1.8 hours less sleep. And they noticed that they had improvements in fatigue, daytime sleepiness, and performance, even though they restricted the number of hours of sleep. So it's quality oftentimes rather than quantity. And glycine is very helpful in that. Glutamine. Glutamine is, you often hear it as a leaky gut helper, right? It helps to repair the endothelial lining in the gut and restore the intestinal permeability and all that. But deficiency of glutamine can actually lead to restlessness and insomnia. It's the most important inhibitory neurotransmitter in the brain. The impulses that go from one neuron to the next, GABA suppresses that. So obviously, it suppresses it not 100%, or we wouldn't have our brain functioning, but it keeps them from overfiring. Has a calming effect on the brain, and what that does is allows people, when they take it, if they are deficient, they get deeper sleep, and their equilibrium tends to be better. So sleep studies have indicated that a regular use of glutamine supplements can lead to a more restful sleep, but there are contraindications as well, because if someone is got the GAD issue and they take a lot of extra glutamine, that can cause a backup, that can be converted to glutamate, glutamic acid, which is excitatory, but then never make it all the way to GABA. So there's things to look at there. So, and glutamine, some people are sensitive to glutamine, so you have to be careful. And there's some controversy over it with cancer. So I'm not sure that that is as founded as people think. Amino acids, the three, glutamine, ornithine, and arginine. We'll talk about those together. One of the reasons that they help people promote better sleep is that they stimulate liver detoxification and the conversion of ammonia into urea. And ammonia can be stimulating. And when people have a buildup of ammonia from the liver, not converting it into urea, then you can have problems with not just sleep, but also with brain fog, because ammonia contributes to brain fog. So there's always some cellular toxins created by the breakdown of proteins, more so than from the breakdown of fats or carbohydrates, because the proteins always have the nitrogenous wastes that need to be step into the picture. So what do these amino acids do? The toxins will stop the energy production in the cells and restrict cellular respiration. Excess ammonia can be due to overconsumption of meat and also improper liver function. So ammonia in the brain paralyzes functional processes. It's how high ammonia levels go, for example, that leads to sleepiness. So when people have sleeplessness. So when people have high ammonia levels, they get wide awake. They don't want to go to sleep. These also, the glutamine, ornithine, and arginine also accelerate healing of wounds. So some people, you know, having difficulty sleeping because of gut issues and leaky gut, now glutamine certainly helps with the healing of that lining, as well as ornithine and arginine. And arginine is important for the production of nitric oxide, which is a vasodilator. So taurine is important because it's a precursor of GABA. So taurine can get converted into GABA. And it works really, really well when people have the racing mind at night and anxiety. Now, again, you know, a lot of these things you might try out and say, well, this didn't work. Well, all that means, that's good information. It just means that person didn't have that particular deficiency. So if you give taurine and they feel more relaxed and they can sleep better, it's probably that there wasn't enough taurine to make enough. But if you give them lots and lots of taurine and nothing happens, they probably don't have a deficiency of taurine. So it works really well when the mind is racing, similar to with passion flower. But it also creates a significant enhancement in the sleep, the quality of the sleep. And in animal studies, it actually decreases the physical activity, which creates more of a calming effect so people can actually get to sleep.